Welcome to the AI Learners Lounge. I'm your host, Cambria, and this is a podcast where AI meets learning and development. From exploring how AI facilitates individual learning to understanding its integration into broader organizational strategies, we tackle it all. Every episode brings fresh perspectives, innovative ideas, and actionable advice for those looking to weave AI into the fabric of the modern learning experiences. Join me as we navigate the intersection of technology and human potential right here on the AI Learner Lounge.
Hello, and welcome back to the AI Learner Lounge podcast, where today we are talking about agile learning for AI, and I've asked a special guest to join me, Laura K. Chamberlain. Laura is the founder of How Now, where she helps creative teams apply AI operations. So before we get started, Laura K., can you give the audience a little bit more details about yourself and your work with AI?
Hey, Cambria. Yes, thank you so much for the intro. And this is awesome to be on here because I've been binge listening to this podcast. So it's really cool to be on this side. I work with teams at How Now, just like you said, helping them create more and admin less. And my approach to this time and my team's approach is really about not using AI or generative AI specifically as a way to replace people or say, oh, the most efficient thing would be for robots to do everything, but rather to actually use it to do the parts of our jobs or take on parts of projects that honestly we didn't want to do in the first place, that we don't find particularly inspiring or interesting, and free up time and free up resources to be able to create more, to spend more time being creative, because that's what I love to do. That's where my background is. And those are the people and companies I've been drawn to working with so far. So that's what I get to do all day.
Great. Thank you. And I'm really excited to have you here. So just to get us started, could you walk us through what agile learning is and what your role has been in that?
Yeah, agile learning in the way that I'm using it, and I want to acknowledge that the term agile may have a bunch of different meanings to people, but the way I'm using it is really about having a flexible approach to ongoing continuous learning that is adaptive for the time that we're living in right now. Because if we're going to approach things from, we could say, a more traditional model, let's say in the context of software, and originally where the term agile really took root in businesses and a management style, it was in software development. They were coming from the traditional, we call it waterfall style of development, where you're defining, you know, your objectives, you're defining what a program is going to look like, for example, and then you're delivering it, and then you're getting feedback. And agile was really in response to that, saying, this isn't realistic for the pace of change. This also isn't realistic for being able to meet the needs of customers and, you know, internal team members that are changing. And I love taking that agile approach, which could be in the form of, you know, scrum meetings or sprints, or even more than anything in the Agile Manifesto, it's more a set of values and principles, and applying that to the learning process itself, whether it's being run by an L&D team, or it's, you know, the whole organization's approach to learning, or even an individual's approach, basically making sure that it's collaborative, that it's iterative, and you're getting feedback and you're learning from feedback all the time, and that it's really adaptable to change. We're not rooted in one way of doing things or one way of learning or even one set of learning goals. We're open and collaborating and responding to real-time feedback in the way that we're learning.
Yeah, I think those agile principles, especially with AI, those are so huge. So just to kind of follow up on that, how does the agile learning approach benefit organizations looking to implement AI solutions? Is there an example you could share of that?
Yeah, there are a ton of benefits. And obviously I'm biased because I'm the one saying, oh, we should be agile about this. But I think we can really see what happens when we're not agile. So I've worked with companies, and I'm sure everyone probably has some experience of being in a culture or workplace culture where, it's very reliant on the status quo. It's very reliant on static processes and static systems that don't change, where it's really reliant on static processes and static systems that don't change. And that just doesn't work anymore. If it was working, it certainly doesn't now, especially when it comes to adopting AI or starting to use tools that leverage generative AI. One of the benefits is that when you have a more agile approach, straight up, you can just keep up with the pace of change better. Because one large language model, let's say GPT-4 Turbo, the way that it works today is not necessarily the way it's going to work 3 weeks from now. And so if you have a really static approach where we're going to take months and months and months to design a tool that's based on the way that this model is working today, by the time you finish the project, it very well may have changed, and your needs may have changed, and you may have learned things along the way in doing the project. And if you can't apply those really quickly, then you might honestly lose more time trying to get the benefits of AI than you save adopting it. And I think a lot of people are running into that, and they don't really have a great alternative. A really good example of this in action was not necessarily related to AI, but it is in a learning development context. Sky Group, which is the biggest media entertainment group in Europe, they in 2017, they basically did an experiment. They said, okay, we're going to take 3 months and we're going to change how we work entirely over to an agile methodology, which is a really big change. It's, a large corporation. This L&D team was, doing really good work already, but they decided we don't want to be stuck in this model where it's taking us 3 months to get out a program, and by the time we're delivering it, now we're getting feedback. But actually, as it turns out, we really could have basically made a minimum, valuable version of this, gotten some feedback, and then use that to help the people who are learning from it. So they took one of their programs, which was a graduate learning program, and they gave themselves essentially 2 weeks to set up a really minimal version of a platform that they could run this program on. And some of the things that changed were, they were just producing the solution way faster than ever before. They were also working more collaboratively. So rather than one person is responsible for the graduate learning program and they have to figure out and solve all the problems related to that, it was everyone on this sprint team, like four people. They had two sprint teams, four people are all focused on this for 2 weeks. This is where all of our brains are. And basically, they were choosing the tasks that they wanted to do toward getting it done, towards solving the big creative problem. And so they were able to focus on the parts of the work that they were more, well-versed in, that they felt they had more skills in. And together, they really made sure we're just going to get the work done in whatever way we can, rather than having a really prescribed way of doing it that follows our traditional systems. And they were also able to get way more learner feedback, which obviously for L&D teams is huge because Agile really focuses on getting that feedback along the way. And so not only were they starting to design a program that was better for learners, but they also, when it comes to AI, if we're going to apply that now, data is huge for being able to really get the benefits of using generative AI. And so that agile approach really was actually setting them up for success now, as I'm sure they're starting to incorporate more generative AI tools. Now they have that data from taking a more agile approach. And it's obviously worked very well for Sky Group. They're growing, they're launching their own studio and everything. So it seems like it's been successful.
That's really interesting to hear. A lot of what I've heard is that you can have it cheap, you can have it fast, or you can have a high quality, but you can only pick two. And it really seems like with AI, we can, if we take an agile approach to it, we can have all three. It doesn't have to be pick two and that's it. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I love that. I think that there are absolutely still limitations, and I don't want to set unrealistic expectations. I do find in experience from myself, my team, and working with other organizations that it really does help solve a lot of problems when you're adopting AI intentionally and responsibly and appropriately in an agile way. It does help solve for a lot of those things. You can do things faster. You can, save costs by, automating something that a team member really didn't like to do, is dragging a lot of their time and energy down. And you can generally get better results, especially when you're really using good quality data, so that you're marrying that data and the insights that something like an AI operations platform can surface. You're marrying that with your own intuition, with your own, collaborative, what comes up in the meeting, if you're doing a 15-minute stand-up each day, for example. That combination of using data and using AI to supplement human skills and vice versa, that is really, it is kind of a cool solution, and it does make it possible to get at least closer to having all three of those. Although you're always going to have trade-offs. And one of the trade-offs, I think, right now is that some people and some companies are hesitating to invest in learning about AI and invest in, trying to do things differently and trying to change their processes. And upfront, that is going to be an investment. It will pay off dividends. And I think we're going to see in a few years' time, even more than that, what happens to the teams and the companies that don't even try to start adopting AI or even understanding how it's going to affect their business model and their customers' lives. They're really going to be kind of left in the dust. And so, even though, yes, it takes time and it takes some resources up front, if you can really invest in upskilling your own people and in making sure that you're working collaboratively with AI systems, so you're not replacing, you're keeping a human in the loop. Yeah, I mean, I truly am seeing teams do things that they did not think were possible for them with their resources before they had these generative AI tools on the market. And like I said, there are limitations, so I won't say it's, a magic wand.
Yeah, definitely not a magic wand, but a lot of opportunities there. So I appreciate that balanced perspective that you have on that. Now, for someone that's new to AIOps, because it is a little bit different than what we've heard before, and it's kind of an up-and-coming role in organizations, can you break down the basics of what that means and how that's applied within organizations now?
Yeah, I'm using AIOps in a way, again, same as Agile, that may be different than the way other people are using engineering. It's a term that might be used multiple ways. So one version of AIOps is really focused on AI supporting the operations of IT. So supporting the operations of the tech people who are making the company work well digitally every single day. That's one version of AI operations, and that tends to be in larger companies where they have really robust IT teams and they need and are, ready to start taking in some of those artificial and machine learning technologies to basically help, get more proactive about making sure that they don't have as many bugs that even reach the consumer because they were able to, have a program basically flag, hey, this might be an issue in 3 days because usage is going up and you might not have enough, server capacity, for example. So that's really in like a bigger team. AI operations is usually supporting the IT side and the IT function. The way that I am usually using it, where I'm working with smaller, scrappier teams, it's more around operationalizing AI. So embedding AI, especially again, generative AI, into the day-to-day operations of the way that a team is working. So I help people, look at what are some of the use cases that would be really, really immediately practically useful that would save you hours or save you budget right now. start small and then work into bigger and bigger challenges and start to make AI tools and make data collection and data readiness and cleanliness a part of the way that the company or the team is operating. So that's more the way that I approach it. And then you also have some AI ops platforms that are, software or software who basically house those insights, just like you would have, learning management system. You might have an AI ops platform. So sometimes it's also used that way.
So when it comes to AI ops and learning and development, what does a partnership between the two look like? And how would AI ops support agile learning strategies?
It's like peanut butter and jelly. It's so good. If you can really lock this in, I think that this partnership is incredible because really it should be very much a two-way conversation and not only between AIOps and learning and development, but also, of course, the rest of the organization. But just between those two, it's going to look different if, let's say, you have a large learning and development department or team, or if you just have one person, or if, the owner operator of the business or the organization is effectively running all the L&D, even though they might not technically call it that. So it can look a lot of different ways, but that partnership, one of the ways that AIOps can really help learning and development is with data analytics, data collection, and making sure, especially if you're having a pretty agile approach, making sure that learning and development is successfully getting feedback from learners, getting information from the learners about how they learn best, what their goals are, what they really need to, fulfill their role. And then AIOps can help to use or offer AI tools to make that learning process more personalized, to make it faster for the L&D team to deliver. Sorry, my dog is trying to get in. And those are a couple of the ways. It's like personalization, making sure that their data is tight, and sometimes also helping them update, the digital tools that they're using to deliver programs. And of course, also supporting any specific workshops or learning arcs or ongoing learning opportunities related to AI. Because as we're starting to see, every single person who's working in your organization will really need to have some foundational understanding of what is artificial intelligence, what is generative artificial intelligence, what are some of, the boundaries around the way that I'm using these tools in my work. And that is all learning that's going to need to take place in every single organization. And for an L&D team or leader that's typically already pretty strapped, it really can help to have AIOps have your back with that material while they're also helping your team function more effectively and helping you, start to make the actual learning programs more and more easy to keep adaptable, flexible, rapid, and not so static, particularly because the capabilities of AI systems are changing all the time.
Sounds like a really great partnership. And I know there's some organizations out there that have really taken this innovative approach and brought in AIOps. For those organizations that aren't quite there yet, maybe they don't even have an AI policy in place yet. What are some steps that learning and development can take to start integrating this type of work, the AIOps, into our own learning and development programs?
I love that you mentioned the policy. That's a really, really essential piece to have in place. First and foremost, I'm just going to pick up on what you said there to begin with, because a policy around, really, we're looking at, I would say, two policies. One would be your public-facing, and L&D may not totally own this, but certainly they're going to need to contribute to a policy like this. You're public-facing. Here's how we use generative AI technologies in what we're delivering to you and how we're delivering it. So, let's say we have a ChatGPT team plan that's not using any data to train their models, but we do put in some anonymized customer data and use it to surface insights, that kind of thing. You want something to tell your audience, tell your potential customers, your existing clients, hey, here's how we're using this, because they very likely have some feelings about it. And it's also something that legally you really need to be transparent about, especially while the laws around this are changing, they're in question. It's important to have genuine trust with people who are going to be interacting with your products, and also to protect your organization. So that's one, having a public-facing version. The other policy to get in place, and it doesn't have to take forever, but this is something where you're going to want basically an AI counsel to help develop this. Usually makes that move a lot faster. The other one is an internal-facing policy that helps your team, whether it's your L&D team or your whole organization, understand, how can I be using these tools? You know, where should I go if I have questions about how to use them effectively? What pieces of my role am I or am I not basically allowed by the company policy to use these tools? Because there are serious security concerns and serious legal concerns if what's happening now continues to happen, which is that most people who are using these tools in the workplace, a lot, well, I won't say most, but a really, really surprisingly high percentage of people who are using them have not told their manager how they're using them. So a lot of people are using them basically in secret, which is a real concern. It's like if one of your employees was blasting you on Glassdoor, for example, and you had no idea, or was putting really great things on Glassdoor and you had no idea, it may affect your reputation and it also may affect your data security. So external facing, internal facing, because your audience doesn't need to read, you know, here's where this sits in your SOP. They just need to know at a high level, how are you using this? What's your approach to being responsible? That would be a really great place to start from a policy perspective and governance perspective. For L&D teams themselves, I would really look into the agile approach and finding ways to make the delivery process of any programs that you might have going on more responsive, more iterative. How can you, as a team, focus on getting out a minimum valuable version of this program and getting feedback early, not sitting there and polishing the stone? How can you use tools like large language model chatbots to speed up your time in, you know, putting together an outline of a program and then get feedback on that? That's just one very practical example, especially because, again, with the pace of change, if we're taking the old or traditional approach and trying to make these perfect programs in a vacuum, by the time you're done making the program, what you're teaching may have changed, especially with how quick tech is changing now. So that would be on the practical side. I would say get the policies in place and then use the tools yourselves to make your job easier, and especially to start collecting that feedback and start getting that data, because later you're going to be so grateful that you got that data, because you're going to start to be able to use AI tools way more effectively to predict, to flag issues, and all that jazz. But you do have to start collecting the data. And I would just say, if you have anyone in your organization who's responsible for, you know, overseeing the quality of your data, they're your best friend. Take them out for a drink, because they're gonna change the game over the next few years. So definitely buddy up with them as well.
Great advice. So thank you for that. Now we're almost at time. Before we start wrapping up, what is one key takeaway that you hope our listeners will get from this episode today?
Cambria is awesome. The show is the greatest. You should be subscribed if you're not already. That is the main takeaway. Seriously, this is a really good platform and a really good, you know, growing community and place to be advancing your own knowledge about this, because, you know, one of the things that can keep up with the pace of change is communities. It's podcasts, it's content. When we're making these courses or programs or, you know, onboarding sequences in a vacuum, those really start becoming outdated pretty quickly, but content and communities and places where people are talking about how this is actually working now and what's really effective now, that is where I would say, just personally for your own career and for your own learning, that's where I would say to invest your time, listening to things like this, engaging in the conversation, because any course that came out about what these tools are capable of, or how to approach them, or how to do prompt engineering, or how to update your learning and development program that came out a year ago, 2 years ago, it's already old. So keep listening to the podcast and engaging with this community, because this is where you're going to get the most up-to-date information. Yeah, that's my genuine answer. Just like subscribe.
Well, thank you for that. I love the focus on community with that. Now, I have a couple of links that I'll put in our description, but can you let our listeners know how they connect with you online?
Yeah, totally. These days I'm most active on LinkedIn, so you can find me there, Laura K. Chamberlain. How Now, my company is also on there. It has a little logo of a cow. Her name is Bessie. And you can always go to hownow.biz, which is our website, and everything is there. You can try to send smoke signals, and honestly, they might reach me better than text these days with all the pings going on. So however you find me is great, but hownow.biz or LinkedIn are really the main places.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and thank you all for listening to this episode of the AI Learner Lounge. Please join me again next Tuesday for another episode.